It has been a turbulent decade here in Vancouver, to say the least.
Check me out, y'all.
Halford and Brock.
In your area.
That's right.
About to cause mass hysteria.
Sportsnet 650.
Hughes, a drop. He scores.
I've never seen a young defenseman like Quinn Hughes.
It's halftime.
Horvath with two. Horvath with three. Patrick.
Look at this undercover.
Hey, it's halftime.
Now Besser off the drift one. Accepted by Patterson. He scores.
It's halftime.
Playoff atmosphere. Look at the boys go. Crank it up. Let's go.
7:05 on a Friday. Sweet, sweet Friday. It is Halford. It is Bruff. It is Sportsnet 650. Reminder that Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. If you have business assets to sell, email them at sales@ableauctions.ca. We are also brought to you by the good folks at the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Three dealerships to serve you better: North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Okay, we got a poll question to do. We got Ask Us Anything Fridays to do. Update from the world of footy. 50th minute, still 0-0 between Sweden and Slovakia. Dom, how are you feeling about this one?
Don't talk to me. The game's on.
Good enough. Okay.
Perfect. Perfect.
Poll question. Ask us anything. What do you want to do?
This morning's Halford and Bruff poll question. Does NHL officiating still bother you? Yes, it's terrible. No, I'm used to it. And the third option is they do a great job.
They do a great job. It's got an exclamation point in it.
They do a great job. 64% say yes, it's terrible. I voted for no, I'm used to it. That's at 30%. And 6% of you are saying they do a great job. I just think, like, I've seen it so many years where the officiating, the standard changes in the playoffs, and then to highlight the changing standard, there will be one call, one or two calls that get made that everyone says, that's a soft call. You can't make that call at that point in this game after this happened, and you let that go. And that's exactly what happened in the Islanders-Tampa Bay game last night. There was an interference call, and it ended up costing the Islanders, because while the Tampa Bay didn't exactly score, technically score on the power play, they did score while they were still setting up on the power play. So, at any rate, NHL officiating, it's best, in my experience, just to accept it. Just accept it's
bad.
Embrace it. It's part of the playoff experience. Ask us anything.
Okay. Go.
I had one where the guy was asking if you could choose any general manager in the NHL, who would you choose? And I apologize for not giving you credit on that. I thought I had it flagged. You know who I think I'd choose?
Who?
Partly for entertainment value, but partly because this guy just gets things done. Lou Lam. Lou Lamoriello.
You would never interview another player again in your career.
Okay.
Lou Lamoriello.
That's a crazy choice.
Why? He's won multiple Stanley Cups. He went to Toronto, got a lot of, here's the thing. If you have bad contracts, Lou Lam will take care of that. If you have any problem with the league, Lou Lam knows ways around it because he's been involved for so long. Don't you think he's done a great job with the Islanders?
I think a lot of that was what he inherited.
Islanders. He lost Tavares.
Yeah, no, that wasn't a great move. But
give me a list
of the great moves that he's made as an Islander.
Getting Barry Trotz.
Barry Trotz was a good move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then getting the right players, surrounding the players for Barry Trotz. He runs a tight ship.
I mean, they had to, lost Devin Taves because they were capped out, right? He'd sure be nice right now. He just wouldn't be on the top of my list. That's all.
See, the problem is people will say, like, he signed Zaitsev in Toronto. Like, Lou Lam has made a bunch of bad moves because he's been in the game for a long time. Right?
He has been around. I mean, that's kind of the other reason. He's old.
Yeah.
He might not have much shelf life left. Like, if I was gonna bring in a guy right now, it's funny that you... you're bringing this up in part, and it was... I got the text, first off. It was expat from New York, now on Gabriola.
Okay.
That was who the text was from. Lou Lamoriello was one of the three general managers voted as a finalist for the Jim Gregory GM of the Year Award, along with Mark Bergevin, which is funny in its own right, and Bill Zito. in Florida.
Like, do you think Lou Lamb would have put up with Jake as long as the Canucks did?
I respect Lou Lamb's no-nonsense. We gotta stop calling him Lou Lamb, by the way, but that's okay. His no-nonsense approach to a lot of things.
Yeah.
I think if you have a problem, more often than not, he'll solve it, and he'll solve it quickly. And that's important, right? He figures it out. And he's been around for an awfully long time. I'm trying to run through the guys, to be perfectly honest. I
also don't care for facial hair. Right. That's my number. Right. I'm just kidding on that. But that would be funny, though, if all the Canucks had to be clean-shaven during the regular season.
Boys, clean it up. I think right now, guys that come to mind right away, Joe Sakic. I think Joe Sakic's done a terrific job. Steve Yzerman is always a guy that I was so enamored with the work that he did in Tampa Bay. And the way that he went about his business, I'd probably take him. Probably go Sakic, Yzerman, probably Julien Brisebois.
Mm-hmm. Brisebois would be another one.
Yeah,
he's a smart guy.
Yeah, I think he's there. The guys that have been tenured for a long time, like Lamoriello, are interesting because you have to be good at your job to be around for that long.
Well, he hasn't been tenured with the Islanders for that long, but you're talking
about... But you know what I mean. The guys that have been doing the job for forever.
You're talking about Doug Wilson or Bob Murray.
David Poile.
Yeah, those guys. Yeah, I mean, Poile hasn't won a cup. Doug Wilson
Who I've always thought is a pretty good executive? Doug Armstrong in St. Louis.
Yeah, he is good.
Yeah, pretty solid.
He makes some tough decisions, ones that, you know, in the short term might hurt and might not be popular. For example, letting David Backes go.
Right.
But I didn't think he did a very good job with Pietrangelo. I thought he should have found a way to pay Pietrangelo. As opposed to bringing in Torrey Krug.
Yep, I would agree with that.
But, you know, and he gave Justin Falk a lot of money, which probably ended up, that was the one that cost Alex Pietrangelo. Like, I don't think he did a very good job with that. But here's the thing. If you've been a general manager for a long time, you've made some mistakes.
Oh, yeah, without question. No one bats a thousand.
Some really bad ones that you're like, what were you thinking there? Mm-hmm. And that's why some of the guys that have been around for a little longer, they're easier to pick apart.
There's a few that there's a few that I am undecided on, jury still out on. Like, for example, Jim Nill in Dallas. I think he might be a good GM, but I'm not quite sure yet.
I never think about Jim Nill.
I know no one ever thinks about Jim Nill, but he's had success. They went to the Stanley Cup final last year.
The one time I remember thinking a lot about Jim Nill was when he was paying both his goalies like $12 million and they both sucked.
Right. That was a failed experiment.
Yeah.
They tried it and it did not work. Jarmo Kekalainen, I think he's a good general manager,
mm-hmm.
but everyone leaves Columbus. And now we're kind of getting word that he's a very tough negotiator. Is he too tough?
Here's a good one. BP and Mission. Who will be the first to hoist a cup? MacKinnon, McDavid, Barzal, or Eichel?
McDavid. Sorry, what were the other two?
Barzal and Eichel.
Right now I'd put MacKinnon and Barzal because they play for the best teams.
Eichel's a wild card, though.
I know.
Depends where he gets traded to.
Right.
Right? He's a complete wild card.
Some rumblings from Pierre LeBrun and others that the Sabres would very much prefer to move him out west.
Right.
Just so they don't have to see him very often.
Maybe L.A.? I think L.A. could build up pretty quickly.
L.A. could.
Mm-hmm.
The wild card with L.A. is they need to start making moves now because the window with Kopitar and Doughty, it closes. It's with age, it closes. So you have to start asking a lot of questions of your young guys. Can you do this?
Right.
Are you ready to be on a cup contender? Because we're going to go out and get Jack Eichel, and that puts us in that conversation. And I'm not sure if they are.
Chris from Surrey asks us anything. Are you guys rooting for the Habs? I know I am. Having a competent GM and Tyler Toffoli is something I wish I had. It's so funny, the opinions that go back and forth on Marc Bergevin. He is either... he's brilliant sometimes, and then he's like, what? Bergevin's tenure
has been very rocky, I would say.
And his start there,
mm-hmm.
I would say a lot of people were like, what? what is this guy doing?
I think it's a joke that he got nominated for GM of the Year.
I think GM of the Year, the award, is so flawed.
Yep.
Because you're going to reward guys that have made big moves, and in the short term, those moves have kind of paid off, right? You don't know how the playoffs are going. Mm-hmm. Because the award is voted on, or it's nominated before the playoffs start.
I think this one was voted on while the playoffs were on, because it's the broadcasters that do this one. I think that's why Bergevin's
in it. Who
were
the finalists?
Bergevin, Zito, and Lamoriello.
Okay.
So Zito got it on the strength of the regular season, for sure. Lamoriello probably on both, but they made a nice run in the playoffs. Mm. And Bergevin's, obviously. You can't tell me that the general manager of a team that finished, I think they finished 17th in points in the NHL and barely made the playoffs in a bad division, is getting GM of the Year based on his regular season.
But has there ever been a general manager that's been rewarded in the year for, let's say, he recognizes that his team needs to transition to a younger group, so he has to rebuild, right? So he trades away one of his veteran players, and he gets a really good return for it, but the team in the short term is worse.
That'll never happen, right? No. It would be like if Kevin Adams trades Jack Eichel for a bounty and gets an absolute fleecing.
I think there should be...
Buffalo finishes dead last in the NHL last year. He's not winning GM of the Year.
I think there should be a five-year lapse period for GM of the Year, and then they go back 5 years. So this season, we would recognize the 2016 NHL GM of the Year.
Smart thinking.
I'm not even joking. I think that would be hilarious, first of all. Someone should do that. If you're a publication and you want to have like a list or something that goes viral and gets lots of attention, do that. I'm sure someone has, actually.
Because you remember, you know what happened?
Some blog, you know, you go back and do the GM, all the moves in a year and go, wow, that was a really good move.
Because I distinctly remember, again, we were working at NBC at the time, when this award was invented. It was in 2010, I think. Three of the first four winners of the award were fired within 2 years of winning it, including Mike Gillis.
Yeah. But that's the thing, because the NHL GM of the Year award, is that not going to reward short-term for the most part, short-term moves, right? Like, Bergevin got the award based on some good signings. Let's be honest. I mean, Josh Anderson has looked good. Tyler Toffoli, obviously, a really good signing. But if the Habs don't win the Cup in the next couple of years, and especially the Josh Anderson contract goes badly, do you know what I mean?
No, I know what you're saying.
Then those signings don't look so good.
And we'll look back and we'll say, remember when Mark Bergevin won, he hasn't won it yet, when he won General Manager of the Year, saying that like 2 years after.
I think it's a totally flawed award.
It is.
Completely flawed award.
Yeah. Well, the nominees this year, I would say, kind of suggest that, right? Jordan in the Ridge with an Ask Us Anything. This is important for you because I assume you'll be tilting a couple of adult beverages whilst on the golf course. What's the go-to beer this afternoon for England versus Scotland?
Oh,
are you used
the home of the answer is Coors Light.
A traditional English ale has a nice floral nose to it.
I don't like a heavy ale.
Weren't you a Newcastle guy back in the day, though?
The Silver Bullet.
Well, I tried those Newcastle brown. Is that a lager or an ale? I think
ale.
Is it an ale? Yeah. Yeah, I would, because I was a Newcastle guy, and that used to be on their jersey for
Newcastle Brown Ale. I remember there was a phase in my early 20s where we were drinking a lot of Newcastle Brown.
I never remember enjoying it.
It was a fine beer.
I have to admit. Do you remember that commercial? I think it might have been for Canadian Club? It was for a whiskey, and it was the guy who admitted, like, I don't really like beer.
Oh, yeah. Is that for a ready-to-drink canned beverage?
No, that's for Canadian
just
for Club.
Canadian Club?
Yeah, okay.
I thought that was brilliant. That, in a way, spoke to me. Like, there's so many more options. I think I said this on the show earlier. Like, I don't know how many beers I've drank in the last, because I haven't been playing hockey. And I love drinking beer after hockey.
Yep.
I love having the odd beer now, but I am definitely drinking more of the White Claw style drinks. I find beer just bloats me.
My hierarchy right now for today's match, you know, I like an old speckled hen. Always loved an old speckled hen. It's a good beer. It's the one your dad has in the back of the crisper. Just for him. Don't touch it. Boddington's. I like a Boddington's. My brother used to drink Tetley's all the time, which are really hard to find now. And of course, you can't go wrong with a Guinness. I know it's neither English nor Scottish, but
can I tell you what
we're talking
Slovak,
about the aisle here.
Can I tell you what Slovak beer is my beer of choice on match day?
What's that?
A ice cold Golden Pheasant.
Golden Pheasant?
Yeah.
Look at you. Very random pull. Isn't Czech, Slovak, that's the Czech bar, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yes. And the origins of Budweiser.
Yes, actually, correct. A little beer.
Czechoslovakian.
Beer history for everyone listening right now.
The first time you ever drank a beer, were you like, I like this? And I'm talking a full beer. I'm not talking about like your dad gives you a sip or something like that when you're
a
kid.
You know what? I hate punting on this, but I honestly don't remember. I honestly don't.
Really?
Yeah. I remember the first time I drank coffee. I remember thinking, why does everybody do this? Mm-hmm. This tastes like dirt water.
Yes.
I remember.
But I don't remember being decidedly turned off by beer. No.
I think in high school, there was definitely an element of me that was like, I'm just drinking a beer because everyone else is drinking beer. Those coolers sure look good. Can I have a sip of that?
Hey, you sipping on that 2-liter California cooler. Pass that on down.
It's Alfred and Bruff show on Sportsnet 650. Really looking forward to our discussion with our next guest, Kevin Kurz, who usually covers the San Jose Sharks for The Athletic. I suppose he was looking for another project.
Yeah.
He's like, I've written about all I can about the Erik Karlsson contract being a bad one for the team. So Kevin is a Philly guy. Grew up in Philly and probably started watching hockey probably in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And in 1987, the Habs and the Flyers met in the playoffs. And they had a pregame brawl that changed the NHL. How did it change the NHL? You'll find out next. That's called a tease, folks.
Ooh.
With Kevin Kurz of The Athletic. It's the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. If you're closing your business and you're not sure what all your assets are worth, don't worry. Able Auctions can help. They've been helping BC business owners wind down and sell their business assets in an orderly manner for over 30 years. Whether it's a complete manufacturing plant, a restaurant, or a mechanical shop, Able Auctions has seen it and done it all. Email sales@ableauctions.ca and get your free of charge confidential consultation scheduled today. That's sales@ableauctions.ca.
I got to tell you something. I talked about Jim Gregory after the last game. I said, Jim, I want to know what's in the rule book about this, because I'm not saying I'm a big hero knowing it's going to happen, but I went to him. I said, what's in the rule book? Is there a rule about this you have to get off right away? Right. And he read it and everything. It's not they don't have any rule for that at all, about going in and shooting the puck and all that. They don't have a rule. He just said it again, but it's a policy. They have a policy.
7:28 on a Friday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. So that clip was alluding to the 1987 Flyers-Habs brawl. And what preceded the brawl was, it was Shane Corson and who? I forgot now.
Claude Lemieux.
They would shoot pucks in the opponent's net. It was their little ritual at the end.
After warm-up.
And the Flyers got pissed off about it.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on getting Kevin Kurz on the phone here. He wrote a big piece about this and how it changed the NHL forever because, and Friedge and Merrick mentioned this on 31 Thoughts this week. Back in the day, I think a lot of people don't realize that the pregame, the warm-up, largely went unpoliced. You just went out and got your skate and you did whatever you did. And there's great stories from the old Western Hockey League about it just being a disaster.
Yeah.
That you could go out and intimidate whoever you wanted and do whatever you want. And it was just part of the theatrics, part of the show, part of the gamesmanship. But the incident that Kevin wrote about did change the NHL because you can't do anything even remotely close to that anymore. Do you remember like a couple years ago, Jamal Mayers got fined I think it was when the Blackhawks were taking on the Red Wings in the playoffs, and he was just taking the warm-up. He didn't even play.
Well, this incident brought in the rules that essentially ended bench-clearing brawls. Mm-hmm. Guys coming over the boards to fight, and it gave them the 10-game misconduct because...
10-minute.
10-game misconduct. 10-game suspension coming over the boards.
Okay.
That's what changed it. It ended it. So we'll go to Kevin Kurz right now to talk about this story that he wrote. Kev, how are you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. I really, really enjoyed the piece you wrote. Why did you decide to write this? I know you're a Philly guy. Was this a memory from little Kevin's childhood?
Yeah. That's basically the best way to put it. And then I just was looking it up, and I looked at the roster and of those teams, I'm like, boy, I know a lot of these guys. I mean, or I've talked to a lot of these guys, or they're easily reachable. So not everybody was. It took some work to get a couple of them, but, you know, a lot of them, you know, Chico Rech is with the Devils right now. Mark Howe is a scout that's been around for a long time. Chris Nyland's got a radio show, right? So a lot of these guys were pretty easily reachable.
I found myself laughing a few times reading this piece because when I think a lot of fans right now, like if you're in your 20s or even your early 30s, you'd read that piece and you'd be like, this is ridiculous how this brawl started. It all started because of superstition and how the Montreal Canadiens had this superstition of putting the puck in the Flyers' net at the end of warm-up. So as the series progressed, the Flyers started going, we don't want this. So it ended with, in the brawl game, was that game six? It ended in the brawl game where the Habs, Corson and Claude Lemieux, were hiding, essentially, and waiting for the Flyers to leave the ice so they could go back onto the ice and shoot the puck into the Flyers' net. What they didn't know is that the Flyers were also hiding and waiting for the Habs to go out there and shoot. And then, anyway, as it happened, the brawl started. And so when you're catching up with the people involved in this, and this is an oral history, so you talk to a bunch of guys, did any of them, were they acknowledging like how silly the whole thing was?
I think Dave Fullan was the closest that came to that. And Larry Robinson, you know, his tone was so much different than everyone else because, you know, he said, well, it's not really something I look back and remember fondly. but some of the other guys, I think mainly on the Philly side, you know, they were more than happy to talk about it. And they look back on it as something that maybe wasn't their proudest moment, but they certainly don't mind rehashing the details of it and going over what happened. Certainly a guy like Don Knockbauer, who is pretty borderline NHL player, but that was something he vividly remembered every detail, whereas, you know, Larry, who he was fighting, didn't quite remember because, you know, maybe he has some other memories throughout his NHL career that are a little bit more important, I would say.
It must have been fun covering the Flyers or being a Flyers fan as a kid. I mean, there was no shortage of, first of all, the team was good in the 70s and the 80s, but also, I mean, they had an identity, and that identity was toughness. It's interesting that you included something from, I think, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the newspaper there. And it was a sports editor, Frank Dolson, who wrote, the NHL sank to a new low last night, and that's an extreme low indeed. Those were major hockey league players out there making a mockery of their sport. I wonder how many people in Philly agreed with that, because there must have been a lot of people in Philly, and frankly, a lot of people across Canada, that were kind of entertained by it all.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. You know, especially in the 80s, and I wasn't around for the 70s Flyers teams, but even in the 80s, they still, and even into the 90s, into the Lindros days, they still embraced that Broad Street Bullies mentality that made them such a popular team in the 70s. And And so in the mid-'80s, when you had guys like Dave Brown, Knockbauer, and even Ron Hextall in goal, you know, here a goalie that fights, for God's sakes, like, you know, how often do you see that? Certainly not much anymore. I think that team, those teams in the 80s were they were happy to embrace that reputation, and it certainly made them popular with the fans. You know, let's just say this. I don't think in Philly they didn't lose any fans over that episode, that's for sure.
We're speaking to Kevin Kurz of the Athletic here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You know, before we got you on the show here, Kev, we were talking about how this used to be fairly commonplace in hockey, maybe not necessarily as much in the NHL, but I've heard like stories of legend from the Western Hockey League about how the warm-up used to be this unregulated place to do what you wanted to do and say what you wanted to say, chirp guys, shoot pucks, skate into the other team's zone. And it's remarkable that, I mean, now, if two guys jaw a little bit at the red line, that's considered pregame antics. It's a far cry from where it used to be. Was there anything in particular with this particular brawl that the NHL said, okay, enough, we have to make real change? Because the changes that you outline in the article are very significant.
Yeah, and I think that was the last episode. I think there were a few others that year, and some guys mentioned. You know, there was one with Montreal and Quebec, I know, that's pretty well known. And, you know, that was, I think, a moment where they said, okay, this stuff has to stop. And, you know, they reduced the number of players that could take warm-ups. They gave a bunch of guys fines. And, you know, they only suspended Hospodar for that for that incident, because nobody knew what went on. Just there were no refs out there. So, that was really the final bench clearing brawl, so to speak, where guys, you know, now you come off the bench, you get an automatic 10 game suspension. And you guys know a 10 game suspension is pretty significant for anybody. So I think that was the biggest rule change that came out of it. Was that any guys coming off the bench? And it wasn't just the players that would get suspended. There would be fines for the players, for the head coach, for the team involved. So that really, I think, was a turning point to start reducing fighting in the league. And as Dave Brown says, and you know, Dave Brown is still an executive in the Flyers organization, so he's someone who's still heavily involved in the game. And he says that he thought that was really one of the big factors that did help reduce fighting in the game over the coming years, and consequentially probably made it more appealing to a national audience and gets us to where we are now, where the NHL, you know, does get these multi-billion-dollar TV contracts, where if that stuff was still going on, I don't think that would be the case.
Or maybe it would. I just want people to...
I mean, here's my philosophy on it. Like, you go back to the, you know, we saw the Rangers line brawl with the Caps after the Tom Wilson episode, right? And for me, like, I don't know if you guys agree, like, okay, we don't need that stuff to happen all the time, but if it happens every once in a while, I mean, it's great. Mm-hmm. That game was appointment viewing. Nobody got seriously hurt. Fighting is still allowed in the NHL. So sometimes I do cringe a little bit when I see some of the reactions to some of that stuff. If you're anti-fighting, say you're anti-fighting, but this is still an entertainment business. And that was a game where I thought, it was good for the league because everyone was talking about it. Everyone wanted to watch it. No one got seriously hurt and everyone moved on afterwards.
I just want people to wrap their heads around this scenario. This was not a regular season game in January. This was game six, and if Philly won, they went to the Stanley Cup final to play Wayne Gretzky's Oilers. Montreal needed to win this game. They were desperate. They were at home, and there was a bench-clearing brawl before the game, and the Habs said after the game that one of the reasons they lost the game is they were exhausted from the brawl, and there were barely any fines or suspensions from this. Like, it is, it is wild to look back on this and think that was the NHL when you look at it now. And I often, like, I always laugh, and when I see the outrage for the latest, you know, horrible act of violence in the NHL,
right.
And I'm like, I wonder what it would have been like in the 80s. if Twitter and social media was around then, people would be fainting.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt.
What was your, one of your favorite stories from when you were talking to people, like what was one of the favorite stories where you're kind of like laughing?
Well, the one I really wanted to get to the bottom of was Ron Hextall getting locked in the dressing room by Mike Keenan. Cause I've heard various versions of that story where, you know, Keenan locked the door and Hextall was kicking the door and left a big dent in it. And it wasn't quite as crazy as, you know, maybe legend had it, at least the versions I heard. But it is funny that Hextall went out there and Keenan went in and he did lock the door and he stood there and said, "You're not going out." And you know, that was obviously a big thing because Hextall was in the middle of his Conn Smythe
right
winning playoff run. Even though the Flyers didn't win the cup, he won the Conn Smythe trophy in his rookie year. And you know, it's true. If he had gone out there, he would have had a little bit of a screw loose, I think, running around. And Keenan was probably right because Hextall could have really hurt himself or gotten suspended just because of how emotional and how fiery a guy he was, certainly as a rookie.
You know, you brought up a really good point there when you were talking about the modern day line brawl, and we saw one this year between the Rangers and the Caps and its place in the game. The thing with this and with the 87 brawl between the Flyers and the Canadiens is it stopped the bench clearing aspect, everyone joining in. And I think that's pretty important because you've seen other leagues implement similar rule changes. Like the NBA, you can't come off the bench at all. There was that infamous moment with the Suns a few years ago in the playoffs where guys took two steps onto the court and they were suspended for a playoff game. The NFL, you see there's coaches specifically designed on the sidelines as get-back coaches. And I think a lot of it has to do, now that I'm kind of thinking it out in real time, it's probably about being able to contain what's happening on the ice. Like with the Rangers and Caps line brawl, at least you knew, you could be comforted by the fact that the only participants were the guys on the ice. No one was going to come join this and make it craziness.
Well, 87 was also the same year as the World Juniors
brawl, punch-up
right?
In Pishtani.
Like, so that would have been, you know, like 8 months earlier.
And same idea, because I read that book from Gare Joyce, and it details very thoroughly how a brawl is one thing, but when everyone joins in and you only have three officials on the ice, you can't control it because you just don't have the manpower to take care of it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why I think the biggest rule that came out of this was that 10-game suspension they put in for coming over the bench. And, you know, even now, it covering the Sharks last year, it was Curtis Gabriel cross-checked. I think it was Curtis McDermott in warm-ups. And the league reaction to it was, you know, he got a fine, and the team got a fine, and I think Bob Bugner got fined. It was like all for this little sort of innocuous cross-check in warm-ups. And, you know, they fought during the game, but they were jawing each other during warm-ups. And just because there was that little bit of contact, the league came down hard on everyone involved. So you see where that is now where, you know, yeah, you're right. They're fine with the stuff that goes on the ice, but yeah, the bench clearing brawls, I mean, that stuff really did have to end, I think, if the game was going to grow. And I think a lot of the guys that I talked to recognize that fact.
The article is titled, "It Was Mayhem, Inside the Flyers Canadiens 1987 Brawl That Changed the NHL Forever." Go check it out now. It's up at The Athletic. Kev, thanks a lot for doing this, man. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the next little bit. It should be a pretty interesting offseason in San Jose. Maybe we'll catch up in free agency or closer to the draft.
Okay, guys. Anytime. Be well.
You too. Thanks. That's Kevin Kurz from The Athletic here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Lots more to get to on the show. We got some pretty good submissions here. A lot of submissions here for Ask Us Anything and What We Learned. Did you want to say something?
No.
Oh, okay. So we'll get into those. 8 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Dan Devine. So we got two games in the NBA tonight of the closeout variety. The Hawks can take care of the Sixers after one of the greatest collapses, speaking of Philadelphia and Kevin Kurz, one of the greatest collapses in Philadelphia sports history. The Hawks can take care of the Sixers. The Clippers, Sad Club members, the NBA Sad Club members, can go to their first ever Western Conference final with a win tonight over the Utah Jazz. We'll talk to Dan Devine about that coming up at 8. On the other side in our Nub segment, we will do some Ask Us Anythings and some What We Learned. It's Halford, it's Brough, it's Sportsnet 650. 7:48 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Looks like it's going to be a good weekend. Weather is going to be nice. There's tons of sprots to watch. Jason's going golfing after the show. What do you have planned for the weekend, Dom?
Don't talk to me.
Oh, Dom's upset. Things are not going well for young Dominic right now. Slovakia is on the verge of defeat. Are you upset because this game was there hanging in the balance and there was a chance for victory?
Or no, was it because of the pen.
Oh, you didn't like the penalty call?
No.
Sweden got a penalty in the 77th minute to go ahead 1-0. We're now in added time. I'm not going to do play-by-play of Sweden-Slovakia. Sorry.
Might be illegal, actually.
That's true.
Here's an Ask Us Anything that I thought of during that last interview with Kevin Kurz.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite year of sports? Because, now I know that's a hard question.
No, I know the answer.
But 1987 might be it for me.
Mine is 1994.
Okay, hold on. 1987 had, I mean, entertainment-wise, it started with the World Juniors Brawl.
Yes.
It had that brawl, Flyers, Habs, and I still remember that. The 1987 Stanley Cup Final was one of the best ever. It went seven games, the Oilers and the Flyers. The Oilers looked like they had it, and it was going to be another easy romp over the Flyers, who they'd played in 85 as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're up 3-1. Then the Flyers won two in a row and forced a game seven, and the Oilers eventually won that, but they actually had to work for it. The 1987 World Series between the Twins and the Cardinals also went seven games and was really entertaining.
Like, yep.
And then, famously, for me, the 1987 Canada Cup.
So hockey and baseball, 87. I said 94 because 94 was obviously the Canucks' run to the Stanley Cup Final. USA World Cup, that was the first World Cup in 94 where all the games were in our time zone, which helped. And I remember just being glued to the matches. That was big. And I was like 15 at the time.
Right. So I would have been 11 in... So the thing about being a kid and you're watching sports, like everything is new.
Yes.
Right? I mean, our poll question today is, does NHL officiating still bother you? And I chose the option of, no, I'm used to it. Like, I've seen it all, right? And I know that officiating in the playoffs changes. Like, I don't get all that upset over it anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't raise myself to that level because it's been years where the officiating is exactly the same.
You want to do some Ask Us Anythings here? I got an Ask Us Anything flagged way early in the morning, unsigned, so it must be from Gary. Ask Us Anything. This can go for all three of us. Do you know a second language? If you could learn another language or a second language, what would it be? I am not bilingual. Not even slightly.
I had a little bit of French in high school, and I remember one of my proudest moments was being able to converse with a cabbie in Paris. And I was not sober, and I think that helped me. But I was just happy that I was able to like have a conversation with him. And tell him where I needed to go. And I did it all in French. I could not do that now. I am very, what's the word for one language? Unilingual?
Yeah.
Monolingual?
Monolingual.
I am trilingual, gentlemen.
So you can speak all three. I was going to ask you that.
Yeah.
Now, Slovak? What's the dialect? But is there a Slovak. Common dialect between...
All Slovak languages are similar.
Yeah, so right.
Polish, Russian, Croatian, right. Serbian, Czech, Slovak. They're all very similar.
Oh, okay. But you speak two separate dialects.
Well, I speak Slovak and yes. I speak Hungarian, which is its own.
They're
wacky
entirely different.
Thing.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I would choose if I could choose a language to learn and I didn't have to put an effort into it. It was just like, yeah, you know this now. Mandarin for sure. Because I think
it'd be the most useful.
Useful, sure. But also I think it'd be hilarious just to start speaking.
Why is that, Jason?
Speaking Mandarin.
Why is that? Why would it be hilarious, Jason?
Because typically guys like me don't speak Mandarin.
What do you mean guys like you, Jason? What are you insinuating?
Dom, we don't need to bring up your history in all this. Don't try and turn the tables on
I just want to get an answer.
I think it would be funny.
My choice would be Latin, by the way.
I think
it's the most not useful language.
What's the least useful language I could learn? Is it Latin?
I think in Vancouver, I'd be able to overhear a lot of conversations around me, and I'd be able to understand them, and maybe they're talking about me.
See, that's a good answer.
That would be hilarious. Then I'd be like, and then I'd be able to say something, and I would also sound really educated, like worldly, right? Like, wow, this guy speaks Mandarin.
It would be the most useful, hands down. I might go Spanish. It might give me a little bit more coup. Like, I might be a little bit more exciting as an individual. I'd be less bland. Spanish, that's my answer, if not that Latin.
Okay, do you have some more Ask Us Anything?
Yes, but we have to pay some bills first. Dom was yelling at me as I was trying to do 8 things at once over here, just carrying the program. Remind me, which one was it again? I think it's Acura,
A
right?
Concrete and Able Auctions.
Right. Able Auctions. We are brought to you by Able Auctions. If you have business assets to sell, email them at sales@ableauctions.ca. AE Concrete, the story here is that if you're looking for work, they are hiring general laborers. And what's more, training is provided for said laborers. So if you have no experience in concrete, that's not a problem. They can teach you everything you need to know. If this sounds interesting, send your resume to jobs@aeconcrete.com. Okay, so for the remainder of this show...
Sounds like he's from Georgia.
Yeah.
That's more of an accent as opposed to a language.
That was an okay accident for...
it was an accident, yeah.
For Georgia. Play it again.
He's gonna
sounds like he's from Georgia.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad. It was good.
Georgia.
It was good. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
No, it was good.
You're going to have some peach tea on your...
All right, let's not make this too obvious, okay? Let's try and have some subtlety to the show.
I will...
Just a little bit.
I will learn Mandarin, and then I will speak Mandarin with a southern accent.
Now, that would be unique.
That would be funny.
That would be unique. 8 o'clock hour on this show, we're going to talk to Dan Devine from The Ringer, NBA columnist. There are a couple of big games on the horizon tonight, and there was a big game last night in which the Bucks staved off elimination, thereby making it more difficult for the Antetokounmpo to participate with Greece against Canada at the FIBA qualifier.
Okay, I know we're running up against the clock,
you got something.
But Mark in North Van texted in, Ask Us Anything, do you have a favorite sign from a sporting event? So, like a fan sign.
Mm.
And he says, remember in the 87 Twins series, there was a sign that said, hey, Kent Herbeck, or was it Herbeck?
Herbeck, H-R-B-E-K.
Yeah, by a vowel.
That's a good one.
Okay?
Yeah,
so that was funny. Okay, the funniest sign I've ever seen was in the Pacific Coliseum, and it was probably the late 80s or early 90s, a game against the New Jersey Devils, and there was probably 8,000 fans there. One of the groups of fans was the UBC engineers,
okay,
who back in the day, and I guess they still do it to a certain extent, but when it was easier to get into UBC,
yeah,
even the engineers weren't as smart there, and they were known for their stunts, and they had a massive banner, and all it said was New Effing Jersey. Like, that's the whole banner. It was
that's pretty good.
It was I don't know how they snuck it in there, but it was just this, and they unfurled it.
That's pretty good.
And it was hilarious. It was like, there was like 8,000 people there, and it was like, it took up an entire section, and it was just spray painted.
Was it the actual swear word?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, yes. Obviously, it was a swear. They didn't say, like,
oh, children.
I'm sorry, I can't say the word, but it was just like, and I was like, little Jason was sitting there just going, this is the funniest thing I have ever seen.
I love hockey.
Yeah.
Little Jason. Halford and Brown.
You don't like my stories. You didn't give that
Please
much.
Break.
You didn't give
Please
that much.
Break.
I did give you, I'm getting Dom yelling in my ear saying we need to go to break because we're way over. So I thought I'll let the story stand.
You never laugh, though. You know, your jokes.
I did laugh at
And that's
your story.
A funny story if you can just picture just the banner.
I laughed at the story. It is funny. Alfred Bruff, Sportsnet 650.